This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, 16th of June, 2017. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Our editors this week were Liz and Gordon Legg. Now, we'll begin with the usual regular notice, and the first is to say that if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, then please just telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. 01962 870 370. And just to remind you that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And just one more reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's all small case and no spaces. www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, the most recent first on the list. And so, on to this week's edition of the Chronicle. Our readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
And welcome back, Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Jerry Tuff.
Hello.
I'm your presenter this week, Ros Lydiard. And so on to the news. The leading headlines this week are National Result Mars Poll Win, MP calls for unity, fatal car crash driver was texting. And the first headline story from you, Claire, please.
National result, Mars poll win. The Conservatives comfortably held onto the Mearn Valley constituency. However, Conservative MP George Hollingbury was a man of few words, as the party nationally suffered losses as the country headed towards a hung parliament. In 2015, Mr. Hollingbury had a majority of 23,913, increasing it to 25,692 this time, a whopping 65.7% of the votes. Meanwhile, the real shock in the Mearn Valley was the downfall of UKIP, who had 1,435 votes this time, with candidate Phil Bailey compared with 7,665 in 2015. Since the Brexit vote last year, UKIP has suffered losses in the county council elections and the party appears to be on a downward spiral. Both Labour and the Liberal Democrats increased their share of the votes, with Labour candidate Sheena King getting 9,932, which is comfortably more than Gemma McKenna got in 2015 when she polled 5,656 votes. Candidate for the Liberal Democrats, Martin Todd, only marginally improved on the 2015 result of 4,987 by 913 votes. Despite the emphatic victory, Mr. Hollingbury was in no mood to talk and chose not to discuss the national picture disaster for the Prime Minister, for whom he works as a PPS, but instead focused on holding the seat. Mr. Hollingbury told the Chronicle, "I am absolutely delighted to be re-elected for the Mearn Valley. I have been out on a regular basis across the constituency talking to voters." In a statement later, he said, "This was a disappointing night, and it's clear we did not sufficiently win the arguments with voters on a variety of issues. But that's democracy, and we absolutely recognise what the electorate has told us, and it's now our job, as always, to listen." Labour Ms. King said that the result gives her party a solid foundation to build on in the Mearn Valley.
MP calls for unity.
The Conservatives held on to Winchester and Chandler's Ford, despite a surge in support for the Liberal Democrats. Tory victor Steve Brine, 43, who won the seat in 2010, will now be serving a third term, despite a swing of more than 6% to the Lib Dems. Mr. Brine said, "I've always said that nobody owns this seat. Nobody by right owns this seat. You work hard and get rewarded for the hard work, and I will never take it for granted. I will represent 100% of people in this constituency." Mr. Brine called for a unity amid the uncertainty about a hung parliament and added, "We clearly have a more divided country than we've had for a long time. We need to try unity over division." The Liberal Democrats had hoped that they could pull off an election shock by unseating Mr. Brine. They had their reasons to be confident too, as the district voted in favour of remaining in the European Union, which was a strong part of the Lib Dem campaign to offer voters a chance of a second referendum. They'd also shaded the vote in the Winchester divisions in the county council elections last month. Their candidate, Jackie Porter, took 19,730 votes, an increase of 6,219 compared to 2015. It was the largest increase in a seat which was not a definite target for the party. Mr. Brine secured 29,729, a decrease of 696 votes on 2 years ago, but still more than all the other parties combined. Ms. Porter said that the Lib Dems had seen a surge in membership and had campaigned hard on Europe, the NHS and education funding, and joked that she may be on the podium again soon. She said the next few months are going to be very uncertain again for most of us. We have no idea what the future will bring. Who knows? I may see you again here in a few months. Labour, meanwhile, increased their share of vote in Winchester, with candidate Mark Challoner comfortably in third place with 6,007 votes. UKIP had a night to forget, as their candidate Martin Lyons secured 695 votes, down 3,427. Mr. Lyons said, "Brexit must now be delivered. The country expects that to happen, and Westminster must not thwart the will of the people."
Fatal car crash driver was texting. A driver who died after his car hit a tree near Winchester was texting moments before the collision, an inquest heard. IT developer Adam Hardwick from Chandler's Ford was the driver of a BMW which crashed on the A33 Basingstoke Road north of Kingsworthy. The 39-year-old of Ormsby Drive was travelling from his home to Hook for an interview in the area the next day. The court heard from Teresa Saunders, his partner, who said he had messaged her en route to say he had forgotten his work pass and was going to retrieve it. In a statement read in court, Simon Hamill, who was driving on the road at the time, said, "I saw two lights coming from behind. The car came past me in lane two. As I came over the hill, I saw in the distance a large cloud of water. I slowed down as I thought there must be some standing water. I drove down closer to the blue BMW. I looked in and saw a male slumped towards the passenger seat. Emergency services were called at about 2:50 p.m. on January the 29th, but Mr. Hardwick was pronounced dead at the scene. Dr. Adnan Al-Badri, pathologist, said Mr. Hardwick suffered multiple injuries, including a skull fracture and bleeding on the brain. Forensic collision investigator Adam Johnson told the inquest that the BMW sustained a colossal impact. He said the last message from Mr. Hardwick was in all probability sent while he was driving, which would explain why he drifted onto the verge rather than swerved, though it was possible he'd pulled over. While there is no direct evidence he was using the mobile phone, it is an explanation for his lapse in concentration," he said. He added there was no way to determine the precise speed of the vehicle. Central Hampshire coroner Graham Short said the evidence strongly pointed to Mr. Hardwick being distracted.
He added, "I don't think it's a coincidence that he sent that message very shortly before it happened. I don't believe there was time for him to pull over and send it. I find he was texting while driving along that road." This illustrates the risk of using a mobile phone while driving. Texting is particularly dangerous, and it led to a tragic consequence for Adam. He recorded a conclusion of accidental death. The penalties against using a mobile while driving have recently been increased in the light of concern that too many drivers were breaking the law.
Thank you, everyone. And we'll move on to the death announcements now. Boylan, Alice née Jennings, Boylan, passed on 11th of June after a long illness bravely borne.
Constable Frederick Arthur Constable died peacefully on the 30th of May, aged 95.
Holden, Barbara Constance Holden, peacefully at home after a short illness on the 30th of May, aged 97.
Lloyd, Esme Ann Lloyd, formerly of Alsford, on Friday the 26th of May, aged 85.
Rose, Robert Bob Rose, passed away on 30th of May.
Welsh, Joyce Welsh, peacefully in Winchester Hospital on 8th of June, aged 91.
Williams, Frederick Peter Freddie Williams, formerly of Alsford, after a short illness on the 6th of June, aged 83.
Thank you. Time for Christian comment now. And Reverend David Williams is the contributor, and it'll be read by Claire.
He's headed this, "The Spiritual Need to Get Away." Like many people, I've spent time trying to find the ideal holiday location for a break from the seemingly endless busyness that occurs from day to day. In the mid-20th century, the historian Arnold Toynbee published the book A Study of History. This was a substantial work running to several volumes. In it, Toynbee invites the reader to look at the contribution made by individuals and groups to history. He refers to an idea that he titled The Principle of Withdrawal with Intent to Return. By withdrawing for a time, people and communities often realised inner strengths that they were unaware of. He saw this time of withdrawal as an opportunity and suggested that this might be a precondition of how wider society might effect change. If we look at the life of Jesus nearly 2,000 years earlier, we can also see the same pattern in his ministry. Jesus withdrew himself before each significant stage in his revelation of himself to his disciples. It's a facet of the life of Jesus to which maybe too little attention has been given. Perhaps it has something important to say, not only to the church, but to the world at large. Certainly the phrase withdrawal with intent to return is relevant for us today. It summarises what we want when we go off on holiday. There is a danger, however. Our holidays may be just as busy and frenetic as our daily lives, and we come back from holiday feeling that we almost need another holiday to get over the one we've just had. Nevertheless, to discover our inner strengths and build stillness, silence, and solitude into our lives, we all need consciously to withdraw with intent to return. And that was written by Reverend David Williams from Romsey Abbey.
Right, letters to the editor next. And well, of course, the topic on everyone's mind is the election. And then there's that Silver Hill again. We've got six this week. Richard, can you start it off with the first?
Yes, which indeed is to do with Silver Hill and is entitled Turning Point and is signed by over 60 people. An informal policy group established by Winchester City Council planned to meet privately with urban design consultants JTP next Monday, June the 19th, but the meeting was postponed to accommodate diary clashes on the part of the councillors concerned. The group's function is to develop the supplementary planning document that will set out the council's vision for the regeneration of the Silver Hill site. We believe that this meeting may be the turning point for the future of the site and of the image that Winchester presents to the world. It will be a not-to-be-missed opportunity for bold and imaginative thinking. There are many towns whose economies are led, or have been revived, by taking advantage of their heritage and their creative talent. This may involve exposed archaeology, museums, theatres, concert halls, art galleries, and attractive open spaces for outdoor performance. They may feature affordable workspaces for creative people and organisations, open waterways, covered markets, antiques and craft markets, and boutique hotels. Other examples feature independent shops with rather than retail chains, while still leaving plenty of room for housing, including affordable housing, offices, transport hubs and so on. As in those other towns, such measures would bring big spin-off benefits to the city's wider economy, as well as playing to Winchester's strengths, underlining what we and many others see as its essential character. And it need not all be done at once. If the framework exists, the individual elements can be slotted into it over time. If the council worries that investing in infrastructure for heritage and the arts is too costly and risky, the answer is that they need not take on the risk. Others can do that, but they won't succeed in raising the capital to build a concert hall, an art gallery, or a museum of the Saxon Age, when Winchester hosted the birth of a nation and a language, without the support of the council. It can show that support by giving them small amounts of funding to help them write the necessary business plans and applications to the Arts Council, the Heritage Lottery Fund and elsewhere, and, in due course, to apply for revenue grants to fill any gaps between income and running costs. We urge the council and JTP to start a process that will differentiate Winchester from other towns in the south. Our city, with its unique heritage, should be a destination to which visitors will come for 2 or 3 days, rather than, as now, just for half a day and then back on the coach to finish their tour at Stonehenge. If the council wants to transform Winchester's economy while making the city a better place for its citizens, it now has a golden opportunity. It must seize it. And from amongst others, it comes from Mike Caldwell of Nuns Road and Tim Fell of Berwick Avenue.
This letter is on the same subject, is headed Culture Please, and comes from Keith Lehman. We do not yet know what JPT, the architect planners appointed by Winchester City Council, will be proposing in their supplementary planning document for the central area. But the City of Winchester Trust has always hoped it will include a cultural element. Consequently, we are pleased to support the excellent letter signed by Tim Fell, Mike Caldwell and others. Keith Lehman, Chairman, City of Winchester Trust.
This letter from Gary Honey is entitled Everything Has Changed. An 80% turnout on June the 8th meant just under 58,000 people voted in Winchester last week and returned a Conservative MP. However, don't believe it when somebody says nothing has changed. Since the last election, the Conservative vote fell by under 1,000, while the Liberal Democrats put on 6,000 and Labour put on 2,000. The real losers locally were the UK Independence Party, losing 4,000, and the Greens losing 2,000. While the Conservatives now have a majority of 10,000, this is considerably down from the 17,000 they enjoyed before this election. There was a 7% swing towards the Lib Dems, who picked up just under 20,000 votes, over a third of all local votes cast. Gary Honey, Northbrook Avenue, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
And again on the same theme, this letter is entitled Waiting Game, and it comes from Peter Rees, who's the former leader of the Winchester Labour Group. With the Conservative Party in disarray, resorting to forming a coalition of chaos with the DUP, it is clear they have no mandate to govern. Steve Bryan is disingenuous in his delusional belief that he represents everyone in his constituency. Labour voters throughout the UK have voted overwhelmingly to reject Conservative politics of austerity. They have voted for Labour and their politics of hope. Our MP is misguided to be flattered because lies have bought votes. His faith in the cold, wooden, heartless Theresa May is worthless. The Conservative Party and its membership is in meltdown over her failed leadership, failed campaign and failed policies. Osborne is right. She's a dead woman walking. Now we have the disgusting prospect of her possibly having to get support through an alliance with the most contaminated group of MPs, the Northern Ireland DUP, the political wing of a loyalist terrorist organisation. Northern Ireland currently does not even have its own government because of DUP leader Arlene Foss's loss to their nation of nearly £500 million through the failed renewable heat incentive deal. Will Steve Bryan actually walk through the lobby with these vile bigots who are anti-abortion, anti-LGBT equal rights, climate change deniers and against same-sex marriage? Even though he has consistently voted against same-sex marriage, will we see him doing a Theresa and Donald, holding hands with these devils? The Hampshire Labour vote was up 3.5%, part of a 10% national increase in the vote share, with the Tories only managing a 5% increase. Labour has 30 new MPs. The Conservatives will be fighting another general election very soon, which will be soundly won by Labour. The Conservatives do not have a mandate in the hung Parliament. Bryan's abysmal record as lobby fodder, ignoring the appalling situation of some of his constituents, will continue to haunt him as vote after vote is defeated by Labour, the people's government in waiting. And as I say, that's from Peter Rees, who was the former leader of the Winchester, Labour group, Monarch Way, Winchester.
Well, the next letter comes from Alistair Marsden. It's on the same subject. It's slightly less forceful. And it's entitled Brexit Plea. When Steve Bryan and his Conservative colleagues finally get bored with playing roulette with our political system, perhaps they would be kind enough to let us have our democracy back. This could start with Steve coming out of the shadows and visibly arguing for a Brexit that incorporates membership of both the single market and the customs union as a minimum. In so doing, Steve would be consistent with the mandate given to him locally, the referendum result last year, and the public's rejection of the Conservative government's hard Brexit strategy in last week's election. Steve was apparently a Remainer. However, his invisibility during last year's campaign and his subsequent actions suggest otherwise. He has argued rather weakly that he had been duty-bound to reject the majority of his constituency and to support instead the mandate of the referendum at a national level. His argument conveniently failed to explain why Brexit necessarily means the hard Brexit of leaving the single market and the customs union. The Conservative government called last week's snap election solely to seek a strong public mandate for this hard Brexit strategy. Thankfully, the public have seen through the weakness of the government's argument, and they received a clear message that they did not have this strong mandate. With the recent election result and following his own line of argument, Steve is now duty-bound to argue for a softer Brexit. It is time for Steve to stop towing the party line and to start taking a highly visible leadership role that at least goes some way to representing the majority of his constituency. To do anything less would be a dereliction of the faith that many have placed in him. Alistair Marsden, Stanmore Lane, Stanmore, Winchester.
This letter from Julia Hallman is entitled Unethical Counsel. I am, as many people are, appalled at Hampshire County Council's investment of their employees' pension fund into British American Tobacco Firm, Chronicle June the 8th. It is unhealthy and unethical, as is their investment of the same said funds in fracking. These investments are in the millions of pounds, which could and should be better spent elsewhere. For example, funding the air ambulance and investing in renewable energy. On page 2 of the 8th of June edition is an article about money being raised for the Hampshire and Isle of Wight air ambulance. In light of the horrific M3 crash featured on the front page, where the air ambulance played a vital role in carrying seriously injured people to hospital, it begs the question, why does such a crucial service not get NHS funding? Why must they rely on fundraising from car boot sales and cake sales? Quite frankly, it is outrageous. I also take serious issue that the organisations that raised the money, i.e. the Hampshire Hunt, makes money out of blood sport. Just because they are traditional country pursuits doesn't mean that they're the right thing to do. Julia Hallman, Barnes Close, St Cross, Winchester.
And the burning question this week asked of Winchester Public on the Road was, did they think Theresa May should step down? Jerry has their answers.
Alec Barth, 19, a shop worker of Alsford Road, said, well, I think as she didn't get the votes, she should stand down. If we had a different voting system, maybe not. But I'm not sure about this new coalition. Sylvia Coy, 36, musician from Winnall, said, from the outside, it looks like she's not quite acknowledged the failure. It feels like she's staying more out of pride than enthusiasm. I think she should move aside for someone with energy. And Kevin Mitchell, 55, taxi driver of Octavia Hill Stanmore, said, I think she should stay to rectify the wrong the election did. I dread to think what the alternative would be. Well, if Boris replaced her, he could exchange hairstyle views with Donald Trump. And Erin Morahan, 20, a shop supervisor of Colson Close Winnall, said, she said she wouldn't call an election, but she U-turned. And she wanted to get a larger majority, but she didn't. She should go. A younger MP should step up to the plate.
Thank you, Jerry. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's all small case, no spaces. news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we have the editor's comment, which is headed Change of Direction for Silver Hill. Until it was postponed, I'm sorry, I'll start that again. Until it was postponed, the meeting due this Monday between senior city council officers and architects JTP, it was shaping up to be one of the most important in recent times. On the agenda was how the city council sees the Silver Hill area evolving. Most readers will recall that the previous development scheme comprised largely shops and flats. There was national controversy over the bulk and appearance of the plans, which collapsed last year for reasons too convoluted in the space available to recount here. Opponents of that development said its collapse gave the opportunity for a radical rethink and a scheme more befitting the ancient capital of England. The council is drawing up a new strategy for the area, which is around a quarter of the size of the Roman city. As we report in this week's paper, a group of citizens are arguing that this is a superb opportunity for the council to change direction and focus more on highlighting the city's rich heritage instead of trying to compete with West Quay or Basingstoke. Their ideas are certainly worth serious consideration. The decline of the traditional high street, shown by the recent departure of Jaeger and now Next, speaks volumes of how the dominance of retail is receding. A new Silver Hill that comprises a greater mix of uses would certainly be vastly more interesting. First person is contributed by Ron Allison, and it's headed Own Goal of the Season, but I don't think he means football. Richard, please.
Not initially, he doesn't know. I'd never expected to be quoting Gary Lineker of England and BBC TV's Match of the Day in this newspaper column, but I was intending to write about politics. But not for the first time, Gary has been spot on target. The day after last week's general election, he described Mrs May as having indeed scored the own goal of the season. Or, putting it another way, as did the Times, complacency led Mrs May to make one of the worst miscalculations of modern political times. And that is the right word, miscalculated. I don't think that in her own mind Mrs May was taking a gamble. She was, so it seemed, utterly convinced that she was right to call a snap election, that she and the Conservatives would most certainly win. And to be fair to her, I think that at the time many of us would have agreed with her. She would, we appeared to think, increase her majority, no problem. And there was a problem, though. Mrs May proved to be not a very convincing campaigner, while Jeremy Corbyn turned out to be rather good at it. Maybe the Prime Minister was wise to avoid debating directly with the other main party leaders, but her absence was most certainly noted, not least by her own supporters. And just repeating strong and stable was not a strong enough argument to win her the case. At this point, I need to remind myself that the Conservatives did receive the highest number of votes and won the largest number of seats. This, however, was not as much as Mrs May had set out to achieve. So we know what Mr Corbyn meant when he said that Labour had not won, but that they hadn't lost either. Be that as it may, as I write, Mrs May is still the Prime Minister. She's juggled with her cabinet, delayed the date of the Queen's speech, and been very obviously trying to make the best of a bad job. The fact that this seems to include coming to an arrangement with the Democratic Unionist Party in Northern Ireland for support in Parliament clearly doesn't appeal to all her supporters. All we can do is wait and watch as the most unlikely of political stories runs on through the week. All this while, the day for the Brexit negotiations to get underway officially looms closer and closer. The election, you may remember, was called by Mrs May so that she would be in a stronger position than before to get our case across, whatever that case may prove to be. Will it be hard or soft? Again, we can only wonder, wait and watch. A final thought on the election. We often hear candidates talking about on the doorstep and what voters are telling them. None of those standing in Winchester could possibly know the views of those in our household, as we were canvassed only through the letterbox. A pity, really, is I enjoy a good argument. I also enjoy sport and the style and professionalism by which it is covered on television. We take much of it for granted these days, but the standard across the channels is usually extremely high. Last Saturday, I became something of a couch potato and during the day watched rugby union from New Zealand and Argentina, tennis from France, cricket from England and international football from Scotland. On all the channels, the coverage was first class. While nothing beats actually being at an event with thousands of others, I had a great time. Incidentally, the laughter you can hear is my family at my idea that I became a couch potato. No own goals by television sport.
We've got a couple of items from Belgarum this week. Jerry has the first, with the headline, Keris Bridge Building in Borneo.
She wanted to do her part to tackle climate change and protect the environment. Student Caris Jones from Chandler's Ford worked as a volunteer with sustainable development charity Raleigh International. Those on the programme, aged 17 to 25, complete environmental projects which protect biodiversity and help to make communities more resilient to the effects of climate change. The 19-year-old undertook a 10-week programme in Borneo, where she worked on a project to build a bridge. Caris said, "Before going abroad, I volunteered with environmental charity Winchester Action on Climate Change. With them, I went to Downing Street to deliver a petition. I've been on marches and I've done talks in schools about the environment. I chose to go on Raleigh because I really wanted to volunteer abroad and help people and the environment. I've never been to Asia before, so I really wanted to explore that part of the world. I've also learnt a lot about environmental issues like deforestation and palm oil, so I wanted to learn more about it and create positive change." With the charity, Caris worked in partnership with Bornean locals on the project in the country's Denham Valley. Caris continued, "Denham Valley is one of the world's last remaining primary rainforests. My team of volunteers were building a bridge across the river there, so that scientists and rangers can access research plots on the other side of the river. Caris is now back in the UK and preparing to study geography at Bristol University."
This article is headed Charity Match at St Mary's. It is usually the hallowed turf where Saints stars play their games, but this time St Mary's Stadium hosted a charity football event in memory of loved ones lost to cancer. Past and present players of Swanmore-based Chase Kings Football Club played 2-hour-long matches in honour of the mums of their vice-captain, Luke Haynes, who's 25, and player Adam Hughes, who's 40. Luke's mum, Tracy, died in April 2015, and Adam's mum, Rosemary, in May 2013. The club held the event to raise money for the Countess Mountbatten Hospice in West End, in appreciation of the care they gave to the two women. The night, which also included a 2-minute silence for the victims of the Manchester terror attack, raised £2,000. Organiser Steve Bridge said, "I just thought it was such a great story. The minute's silence in particular was quite emotional. I thought the event was ambitious, with 44 players having to find £60 to play and then raise sponsorship of at least £55. But the players came through and together we did it, culminating in a beautiful night with 200 spectators cheering us on. Supported by Waltham Chase Methodist Church, the team play in the Solent Churches League, which has a no-swearing agenda."
Thank you, Claire. And we're moving on now to historical items. My first is for 200 years ago. June the 16th, 1817, outlaw child sweeps. On Saturday, a numerous meeting was held at Freemason Hall for the purpose of adopting a petition to Parliament praying for legislative interference to abolish the use of climbing boys in sweeping chimneys. The Duke of Sussex presided. Mr. Wilberforce, in a forcible speech, called upon the public to manifest the same humanity for the sons of their own country that they had for the children of Africa. Sir Francis Burdett alluded to a trial at the Old Bailey, where a man was acquitted on a charge of causing the death of a child whom he used as a chimney sweeper. Cobbett in USA. American papers to the 20th ult have arrived in town. From the Boston Advertiser, we extract the following paragraphs. William Cobbett is about to begin his publications at New York. He says, "To pretend he would accept no compensation would be to act the hypocrite. But the private advantage weighs little with him. His professed object is to reform the governments of Europe, and he conceives the people were prepared for his impressions. With regard to England, his views appear to be to obtain a reformation in the House of Commons, but not to disturb the monarch, church, or nobility.
100 years ago, June 16th, 1917. A daring and destructive raid by a number of enemy aeroplanes on the east end of London was made at noon on Wednesday. The number of machines that crossed the Essex coast is put at 15. Only a portion of them visited the London district, but they dropped a large number of bombs and they did much damage. A bomb fell in a school, killing 10 children and injuring about 50. Another fell in a railway station and struck an oncoming train. 7 persons were killed and 17 injured. And the second paragraph is headed, Women Ignored. We have a right to expect that the government will devote all its powers to the prosecution of the war and not fritter them away on matters which have nothing to do with victory. Because numbers of women are behaving splendidly, the fact is being exploited by politicians from motives of public expediency. These are the words of Mr. Asquith, who, with Mr. Lloyd George, made rather sentimental reference to the war work of women. Precious time is being wasted on the Electoral Reform Bill, which, in giving votes to women householders over 30, quite excludes the female munition workers, the very class the measure is supposed to favour.
And from 50 years ago, June 17th, 1967, Rhodesia lost. Britain's last chance to keep Rhodesia within her family had now gone, Conservative MP Major Patrick Wall said at a public meeting on Rhodesia in Brockenhurst on Wednesday evening. Major Wall said that with the Middle East in a turmoil, South Africa was of immense importance to this country, as a great number of ships could not get through the Suez Canal and were now on their way to Cape Town. Major Wall, who is chairman of the Conservative Commonwealth Affairs Committee, and other speakers, were constantly heckled by members of Southampton University's Socialist Society and others who were demanding a fair deal for the black workers in Africa. Crisis in the Middle East. The crisis should lead the government to rethink its strategic policy. Mr. Oscar Merton, MP for Poole, said at the Winchester Conservative Luncheon Club on Friday last week. He was speaking with immediate second-hand knowledge, having heard the Israeli ambassador talk to the Anglo-Israeli group in the House of Commons. Mr. Merton said it was difficult to understand why Colonel Nasser had thought he was better able to win than before, unless he'd been relying on moral and material help from Russia.
25 years ago, June 19th, 1992. New charity launched. Internationally renowned naturalist Dr. Jane Goodall has launched the UK branch of her Children's Green Charity at Peter Simmons College, Winchester. Roots and Shoots aims to improve young people's awareness of nature and the environment and was originally set up by Dr. Goodall in Tanzania. The Jane Goodall Institute is international with its main office in America, and for a very long time I've wanted to set up a children's part of it. Roots and Shoots is precisely that, she said. The second section, Titanic Exhibition. When the passenger liner Titanic struck an iceberg and began to sink, 3 children, including a 9-week-old baby, were among the passengers lured into a lifeboat. 80 years on, those 3 survivors were at the opening of the new Titanic Voices exhibition at the Maritime Museum, Town Quay, Southampton. The exhibition documents the impact of the Titanic disaster and that it had on the city and its people. Milvina Dean, who's 80, of the New Forest, was the youngest passenger on board the Titanic at just 9 weeks old. her father had decided to take his family to start a new life in Kansas. Eva Hart, who's 87, of Romford, was 7 when her father, a master builder, decided to move to Canada. The third survivor was Edith Haseman, who was 16 years old. She lives in Harefield, Southampton.
And there are two more items, as we're in the historical section, that we're going to read for you. The first is headed, The Murder of Vera May Glasspoole, 15. The wartime murder of a teenager maid nearly 100 years ago that has never been solved. A tragic discovery was made at Longwood, near Winchester, on Wednesday morning, July the 11th, 1917. A girl's body being found under circumstances which point to murder. So reported the Hampshire Observer of the 14th of July that year. The body was that of Vera May Glasspoole, aged 15 years, who had been working at Longwood House as a scullery maid. Her murder has never been solved. Vera May's home was Rose Cottage, Baybridge, also known as Chapel Cottage. She started work at Longwood House in September 1916. Her father, Eli, had worked as a woodsman on the Longwood estate but had lost his job due to a reduction of estate hands a couple of weeks before Vera was murdered. Vera, born in April 1902, was the second youngest child of Eli and Agnes. She had 4 brothers and 4 sisters. It was 28-year-old married sister Edith Morris who, out with her father, looking for Vera, found her body approximately halfway between her home in Baybridge and Longwood House. Vera lived in at Longwood House, but visited her home Sunday and Tuesday afternoons. On Tuesday, July the 10th, she left Longwood House to walk to Baybridge, but never turned up. Her body was found in an area known as Featherbed Copse, about 35 yards from the road, in an area of beech, elm and pine trees. Superintendent Smith of the Hampshire Constabulary was called to the scene. At the initial inquest 2 days later, Edith described how they found Vera with a wound to her throat and blood on her mackintosh, and that her clothing was disarranged. Dr. Richards examined the body and concluded that the young girl had been strangled, as well as suffering bleeding from wounds on her neck. It was also concluded that it would have been impossible for the deceased to have inflicted those injuries on herself. A second inquest was held at the Memorial Hall in Ossulbury on July the 19th. A verdict of unlawful murder was announced. Evidence was given that Vera had told a fellow servant that she had arranged to meet soldiers on the afternoon of the 10th. Florence Beatrice Wells, housemaid at Longwood House, told the inquest that she had, with Vera, met soldiers on Sunday before Vera's death. She added, May promised to meet her RGA fellow and also one from the ASC. The army camp at Hazley Down was just 1.5 miles away, and suspicion centred there. The police offered a reward of £15 for information which might lead to the arrest of the guilty. Was believed that Vera's small silver keyless watch with flowers on the dial was missing. It seems that this was never recovered. There are no known photographs of Vera May. She was buried in the churchyard at St Andrews at Ossulbury on July the 14th, 1917. Nearly 200 people attended the funeral. The exact location of her grave is not known. Later that year, a soldier, Private William Fenn of the Royal Army Medical Corps, admitted to the murder. He was arrested, but subsequent inquiries proved that he was in a camp many miles away at the time Vera was murdered, and the case was discharged. No files relating to the case have been found in either the National Archives, the Metropolitan Police Archives, the Hampshire Constabulary, or the Hampshire Archives. The case will never be solved. Police at the time did not have all the sophisticated forensic tools available today. The fact that the murder occurred during all the disruptions of the First World War also added to the difficulty of solving the case. Speculation and rumour as to who committed the crime continued for years. I have to thank the late Walter Trott, 1924 to 2012, and Mrs. Jill Mariner for assisting me in my research. On Sunday, July the 9th, 2107, Vera will be remembered at the 11 a.m. search in St. Andrew's Church, Ostlebury.
And I have a small feature here about county history. A chance to see Bygone Hampshire will be screened in Winchester later this month. Bygone Britain, Yesterday's Transport, will be shown at the Discovery Centre, Jury Street, at 2 p.m. on Sunday, June the 25th. The screening of historic films of Yesterday's Transport in southern England will be introduced by film archivist Rob Foxon. The early days of private motoring are featured, showing how to pass the newly introduced driving test in 1934. The highlight of the show will be the first screening of a recently discovered film of Winchester in 1936, with views of local streets and businesses, including Allen's Confectioners in the High Street. The film was probably made to promote the city as a destination for the touring motorists and bus and coach passengers of the day. The show is being promoted by the Friends of King Alfred Buses, a charity dedicated to preserving examples of the King Alfred vehicles that provided local services between 1920 and 1973. A King Alfred vehicle from the 1930s is planned to be on display outside the Discovery Centre for the event. The programme also features rare footage of trams in Southampton in the 1930s and mainline electrification from Waterloo to Portsmouth in 1937 and to Bournemouth in 1967. A Three Counties winter tour of Hampshire, Dorset and Devon in January 1949 in an iconic Bedford OB coach shows passengers in freezing conditions, but these winter holidays are here to stay, says the film. The much-loved trolley buses of Bournemouth come back to life in historic colour footage from 1951, whilst another film shows how old buses never die as a retired Southampton bus finds a new role as a play bus in Woking in 1982. Tickets, £8 from the Discovery Centre box office, 01962 873 603. 01962 873 603.
Thank you very much for all of those. We're going to have a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. So what's on at Winchester Cathedral? Well, on Tuesday the 20th of June at 1 p.m, there's a lunchtime concert by Jean Sir on the violin. That's free concert with a retiring collection. And then on the 27th of June in Winchester Cathedral at 1 p.m, a lunchtime concert by the talented young musician of Wells Cathedral. Again, that's free with retiring collection. Now, before I go on to other items on the new, Claire's got an item about John Sopel, who is, as you will know, a reporter on the radio, particularly covering the American news. And she'll read it for you now.
He's to give a lecture on US politics. The BBC's John Sopel will share insights into President Trump's America at a special event in Winchester Cathedral this autumn. Tickets are now on sale for Mr. Sopel's lecture on Washington and North America on Saturday, September the 9th at 7:30 p.m. The renowned journalist, who attended Southampton University, started his career on Radio Solent and once lived in Ropley near Alresford, is beamed into millions of living rooms from the White House almost daily. For the last few months, he has shared the ups and downs of Donald Trump's presidency with viewers across the country. At the Friends of Winchester Cathedral's annual lecture, Mr. Sopel will use his many first-hand experiences, travelling aboard Air Force One, interviewing President Obama, questioning President Trump, gun shows, Missouri riots, to show that the USA is now more than ever a truly foreign land. Tickets are £22 and are available from Winchester Cathedral Box Office 01962 857 275 01962 857 275.
Thank you very much, Claire. And before I go any further, I'm going to give you a pre-announcement that the Winchester Annual Hat Fair is going to take over the town. And that's from the 30th of June until July the 2nd. That's really a spectacular event. And there will be more here later on to tell you a bit more about it. And I'm moving on now to a guided tour. A guided tour of Winchester's Hospital of St Cross will take place next month. The Campaign to Protect Rural England has arranged the tour of the Almshouse of Noble Poverty on July the 11th from 11 a.m. And it'll last for about an hour. So if you're interested, for a place, just contact Denise Messenger on 01962 841 897. That's 01962 841 897. Now, meetings in Winchester. On Thursday, June the 22nd, Murder, Sex and Mayhem in English Churches. Paul Woodhouse Suite, Winchester Cathedral Close, from 7 p.m. for 7:30, £6 for friends, £9 for non-friends, from the Friends Office, 01962 857 245. So that's the 22nd of June, Murder, Sex and Mayhem in English Churches. A little bit sensational, I think, that one. There are concerts, many concerts in Winchester, one of which I'll tell you about now, is on June the 24th, there's a charity concert at St Paul's Church, St Paul's Hill, Winchester. That's at 7:30 p.m. The music of Hummel, Haydn, Mozart, Dvorak, in aid of Serve Wessex. The adults will cost, the tickets will cost £10, with the concessions of £8. And also, earlier at 4 p.m, there'll be a children's mini matinee with a reduced programme, especially for 5 to 12-year-olds, and that will be £2 on the door. And that's it for the concerts and the meetings, and let's move on to theatre. The big poster I've got here advertises Anything Goes, and that's going to be performed by students of Winchester College. And it's at the Theatre Royal, Winchester, on Tuesday the 4th, 5th, 6th of July at 7:30 p.m. And there will be a matinee on Wednesday the 5th at 2:30 p.m. And the prices are standard of £14 with concession of £10. And the matinee will all be £8. And the tickets are on sale from the Theatre Royal box office at... Ooh, have they given us a number? Apparently not. No. But there is a website, and I'll give that to you. It's www.theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. That's www.theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. Anything Goes is a wonderful musical. If you want a little lift, that's the one to go and see. It's very, very good. And then theatre other than that, on Saturday, June the 24th, Shakespeare's Twelfth Night at Bishop's Waltham Palace Rain or Shine Theatre. On Wednesday, Thursday and Friday, June the 28th, 29th and 30th, Illyria Open Air Theatre are doing Pride and Prejudice in Cloisters Garth, Winchester Cathedral Close. That's at 7:30 p.m. Now it says here you've got to bring something to sit on, and it has to be low back chair. Oh, and a picnic. And the tickets from the Cathedral's box office, which is 01962 857 275, 01962 857 275. And that's it for what's on. I hope you do manage to see one or two of those. Winchester's going to get very busy over this summer, and it's always worth looking at. So I'll leave you now and we'll move on to the next item. Before we move on to the general news, I'll give you the lighting up times. And that's starting on Saturday, the 17th of June. The sun will set at 9:23 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 21st of June, the sun will rise at 4:50 a.m. and will set again at 9:24 p.m. And we're moving on now to general news. Jerry, can we have your first article, please?
500 attend the 50th anniversary of church. Over 500 people turned up on Sunday to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Winchester's St Barnabas Church. In the morning, the church held a Thanksgiving service led by the current vicar, the Reverend Ed Dines, and many of the past vicars were there. These included Terry Roberts, Michael Powis, and Philip Cochrane. Afterwards, in the sunshine, over 500 people came to the fun day on the green outside the church in Week. Throughout the day, there was live music from the Winchester Sings Choir, a magic show, a free prize draw, face painting, glitter tattoos, a bouncy castle, a free hog roast, and messy sports involving space hoppers and custard. The new mayor of Winchester, Councillor David McLean, joined in the celebrations and introduced the choir. Reverend Dines said, "It was a very successful day. We have well over 500 people attending. It was a chance for St Barnabas Church to share God's love for the community because God has been so good to us." Helen May, parish administrator, said, "It was a great day. Everyone enjoyed themselves. We are grateful to the community. The community paid for the church to be built 50 years ago, and it was a way to thank them for supporting us." On June the 11th, St Barnabas Day, 1966, the foundation stone of the building was laid and was dedicated by the then Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Faulkner Allison, in the following year, on September the 16th. The church originally cost £31,000, and of this, £9,400 was raised by individuals and groups living in the St Barnabas parish community, much of it collected by parishioners going from door to door with buckets, asking local residents to buy a brick. Along with the money raised, people worked together to stitch the kneelers that are used for prayer. There are elements of the current building that were installed or made possible because of other buildings of the past. The church bell is from St Peter's on Chesil Street, now Chesil Theatre, and money was received from the diocese after the sale of the redundant St Morris Church, which was on the site of the current Debenhams department store. The church spire was hoisted up by a crane that worked from a lorry which was parked beside the church. St Barnabas is the parish church for people living in the Winchester districts of Week, Hairstock, Tegdown and Kings Barton, better known as Barton Farm.
Funeral directors bury competition. They were the big winners at this year's Winchester Business Excellence Awards. Richard Steele and Partners, the family-owned funeral directors, have been serving Winchester and the wider Hampshire community since 1860 through four generations of the Steele family. The Black Tie event, now in its 15th year, saw the company win the Service Excellence Award, as well as being crowned Simply Health's Business of the Year. The business is one of the longest established in the city that remains in the same family ownership. Richard and Ian Steele, together with their team of staff, offer a truly personal 24-hour service and firmly believe that every funeral is unique. Through their extensive experience, they offer help and guidance on the style and location of the ceremony, from a simple unattended committal for a few hundred pounds to a personalised religious or non-religious celebration that reflects the individual. Ian Steele said, "We were honoured to be awarded the Service Excellence Award for 2017 as it was nominated by the public. It reflects the tireless care of our long-serving team. They give of themselves all day, every day to help bereaved families in Hampshire." Richard Steele said, "My father, Stanley Steele, twice Mayor of Winchester, would be exceedingly proud to know that his dedication to local service excellence continues to this very day." And of course, we, as your readers, are here at the Richard Steele base in Chesil Street. And it's thanks to them that we are able to function.
Indeed it is.
New pressure over Silver Hill. Winchester civic chiefs are coming under pressure to change direction over the future of Silver Hill. Scores of local people have signed a letter urging the City Council to make culture and history the main plank of the development instead of shops and flats. More than 60 have signed a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle and printed today. A private meeting between councillors and architects JTP this Monday has been postponed because of councillor unavailability. Campaign leader Tim Fell said, "The main issue isn't that they're excluding the public and press from their meeting, though I do wonder whether they see the irony of doing that in the middle of the biggest exercise in public participation Winchester has seen in decades. The main issue is that whether they take their decisions in public or in private, they take the right decisions for Winchester." Mike Caldwell added, "The support we've gathered for this letter in little more than a week is only the tip of the iceberg. It's vital that people and organisations we've missed contact councillors and express that support to them. It's equally important, for the sake of open democratic debate, that those who disagree with us also make their views known. The council must be given no chance to overlook the wishes of the people of Winchester yet again." Professor Bill Lucas, trustee of the English Project, which is seeking a permanent site to celebrate the English language, said, "For 14 years, the City Council thought that it would boost Winchester's economy through a retail mix similar to those offered by Eastleigh, Southampton and Basingstoke. This completely misunderstands Winchester and is a huge missed opportunity. An alliance of organisations has credible plans for a new cultural centre, which will celebrate the extraordinary historical and linguistic role Winchester has played in the evolution of our nation. For too many people, Alfred's role is reduced to being a statue at the bottom of town. But just as Shakespeare is for Stratford, all things Alfred can become a compelling reason for visiting our great city. The council is currently consulting on the new planning framework that will guide the future development of the area. A previous scheme, mainly of shops and flats, collapsed last year because of irreconcilable differences between the council and its co-developer Henderson's. A council statement said, "We don't yet know the recommendations that JTP will put forward at this private meeting. The IPG's job is to look into their interpretation of the public consultation feedback. At this stage of the process, no decisions have been made on the direction of this project."
On guard after burglary spate. Residents in Colden Common are on their guard after a wave of burglaries over the past 2 months. Households have been hit by burglars who appear to have targeted the homes when the householders are away. The Chronicle understands that 12 properties in Oslebury, Twyford and Colden Common have been hit since around April the 7th. Police arrested a 30-year-old male from the Southampton area in relation to the recent burglary in Moore's Close, Colden Common. He's been charged with an unrelated burglary in the Southampton area and was due to appear in court last Friday. The man has been released under investigation at the current time in relation to the Colden Common burglary. The burglary in Moore's Close may or may not be linked to the wider series in the village. City Councillor Sue Cook said, "Residents are worried and it's very frustrating. I know that the police are trying to take down the perpetrators. Everyone is on their guard and everybody is looking out for one another. The police presence has been good. They've been at the meetings and been very active." One villager who was burgled said, "It's not a nice thing. The burglar went into every room of the house and stole children's money boxes and quite a bit of jewellery." He said that the parish council is looking to set up a neighbourhood watch, and he praised the police response. The villager added, "I think the police have put a lot of resources into Colgan Common. They're out every night. They have PCSOS, and I see a car going round every evening." Sergeant Stuart Gilmore said there has been only one further burglary since the parish meeting on May the 24th. He said, "I am aware that rumour continues to circulate around the village about potential burglaries. I can confirm that there has been only one further burglary reported to Hampshire Police. The latest burglary report was in Moore's Close, and whilst there are some similarities with the previous incidents, there are also some quite significant differences to the series that I reported on." Sergeant Gilmore said, "It's been an unprecedented, intense period of burglaries, and it's really unsettling for the wider community. So we really just want to persuade residents that they still need to be vigilant."
Now, if you can stand the excitement, yet another item about some planning issues. Discussion on multi-million pound centre. Winchester policymakers met to discuss the progress of the proposed multi-million pound leisure centre. Councillors and designers came together for an update on the scheme at Garrison Ground Bar End to replace the ageing River Park Leisure Centre. Councillor Lisa Griffiths, portfolio holder for health and wellbeing, said the council envisioned a facility for all, from pre-birth to old age, for the able-bodied and the disabled. But the meeting on Monday heard that the timetable for completing the project could be longer than planned. A report to the committee stated that there is danger of project creep, leading to higher cost, complexity and likely delays. The council is proposing the new centre to be built on the artificial hockey pitch at the site of a cost estimated at £36.3 million. A planning application is expected early next year, with approval in mid-2018. Building work should start in spring 2019, with completion around autumn 2020. The centre is proposed to have an 8-lane 50-metre pool, a 20-metre teaching pool, 12 badminton courts, 180 fitness stations as opposed to 120 at River Park, and 4 squash courts, 2 studios, as well as treatment rooms, hydrotherapy, soft play and a cafe. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for environment, described the timetable as ambitious, with Steve Tilbury, Council Corporate Director, confirming that he anticipated they could take significantly longer on planning than what is shown on that timetable. Councillor Roger Huckstep asked whether River Park might end up being closed during construction. Mr Tilbury said, "That's not something we want to see happen. If we find that there is something which is going to be a big bill on the existing building, we will bring that to you to ask what to do. The existing building is not going to fall down. The elements of maintenance The elements of maintenance we will do will keep it running. But every project needs an ambitious finish time." Mr Tilbury also confirmed that further meetings would be taking place to decide what level of performance the 50-metre pool should meet. "The difference between the lane width could be of significance in terms of competition," he said. The new centre's impact on the environment was also a key point of discussion.
Pupils learn in open air. A Winchester school has created a new outdoor classroom for lessons in the sunshine and fresh air. St Swithin's Junior School in Alsford Road has opened a new outdoor classroom to make lessons more fun for young pupils. St Swithin's Junior School headmistress, Mrs Rebecca Lyon-Smith, has opened the new outdoor classroom in the school grounds. Set near the junior school building, amongst trees and alongside open fields, the new classroom is a safe space for children to learn new skills whilst being outside in the fresh air. Mrs. Lyons-Smith said, "I came to St Swithin's with a passion for outdoor education. not simply because I believe fresh air, exercise and fun are essential to our mental well-being, but because beyond the classroom, children are able to show off a wealth of skills, aptitudes and personal qualities that can remain hidden in a traditional academic environment. The new outdoor classroom will be a real asset to everyone at school. The opening of the classroom took place on National Outdoor Classroom Day, a global initiative involving over 1 million children. The whole junior school enjoyed a full day of outdoor activities, including toasting pancakes on the campfire, tree bark rubbings, and blindfolded walks in the woods.
Fears over student flats. Residents in a Winchester suburb are furious at plans for a major student development. Plans have been drawn up for 91 self-contained flats on the corner of Sparkford Road and Erskine Road, close to the main King Alfred campus. Residents fear that it will create an eyesore, cause parking issues, and say they are fearful of the impact of antisocial behaviour. Unilife, who are behind the plans, say they understand residents' concerns, but claim they are targeting the noise and bad student behaviour is unlikely to be a problem. They've also argued that a development of this kind eases pressure on homes in multiple occupation in Winchester. Dozens of residents gathered on Tuesday to see the plans at a first-hand consultation. Kelly White of Erskine Road said, "We're concerned for our children. This is getting worse here. With this going on, there's going to be 90-odd more people in that area. We all want to move out. It's a lovely area without the students." Elizabeth Thorne of Airlie Lane said, "Well, I don't like the design or the flat roof. It's not practical. We also have problems with noise on Cromwell Road already, with student parties sometimes until 4 a.m. Vocal residents against the plans have set up a Facebook group and also launched a petition, which has been signed by 22 people so far. A planning application for the scheme has not yet been launched. Paul Brundell from Unilife said, "It's been a positive day. There's been a lot of tweaking and shrinking of the development. We're retaining the trees and looking to plant an additional 17 trees. We're looking to take on comments, and if we do have to put the brakes on, we can. We're putting in CCTV and working with local police to combat antisocial behaviour. We are generally targeting international students and postgraduates who want a study and a studio rather than cluster accommodation. We're also setting up a 24/7 emergency number for local residents." The news comes after the Hampshire Chronicle reported how developer Williams Ewan is preparing to launch a scheme for 600 units at nearby Milnthorpe Lane, despite opposition from the residents in the area. The university said they have nothing to do with the schemes. A spokesperson said, "Neither of these schemes have anything to do with the University of Winchester. We've not been involved or engaged in their development at all. We have really good links with our neighbours, and we would hope that the developers will engage with us and other neighbours as we do with our own developments."
Next closes after lease expires. A major high street store in Winchester has closed. Next has officially shut after its lease ran out and a plan was approved to turn the top two floors into luxury flats. The closure has affected 15 full-time staff, but the company say they will aim to ensure they relocate to neighbouring stores. The news comes after other clothes shops have closed, including Jaeger and Monsoon. However, TK Maxx is preparing to move into the Brook Shopping Centre, taking this two-storey unit vacated by Beals.
Shampoo heist. A thief has admitted stealing vast quantities of hair care and grooming products from Boots, has been ordered to pay thousands in compensation. Daniel Barrera Craig, 28, admitted three counts of theft. On May the 4th, he stole goods valued at £906 from Boots in Winchester. On the same day in Basingstoke, he stole items valued at £2,205.65. and on April the 19th, from the Basingstoke store, he took products valued at £2,968.57. In total, the products, shampoos, gels, conditioners and tools, were valued at £6,080.22, magistrates in Basingstoke heard. Craig of Wooden Gardens, Bournemouth, was ordered to pay £3,500 in compensation, a £40 fine, and was jailed for 4 months, but sentenced suspended for 12 months.
Thank you very much, everyone, for all of those interesting pieces. And before we go, just another reminder here that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870 370. And it just remains for me to thank all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Gordon and Liz, and of course, many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Richard.
Bye.
And Jerry.
Bye.
And from me, Roz, until the next time, goodbye. And just would you remember to put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Thank you very much. Enjoy the summer.